ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Hello, I'm Barack Obama, and I'm here to talk directly to you, the American people. Thank you for your support. Now, everyone knows the best way to create jobs is to start small businesses. Now, you may ask me, Mr. Obama, how do I start a small business in this economy? Well, here's your answer. You start a big business, and then you wait. You're welcome. Now, as you know, the Supreme Court has recently ruled on the individual mandate in Obamacare. Now, this is good news, but I do believe that there has been a misconception. Many people were under the impression that mandates lead to gay marriage. Don't be confused. You know what I'm talking about. Now, as you know, I recently announced that my position on gay marriage has undergone an evolution. This has caused a lot of controversy. Many conservatives are very upset that I believe in evolution. Now, I want to take a moment to talk about the recent turmoil going on over in the Middle East. As you know, these are very uncertain times for the countries of the Middle East. They're experiencing a crisis of leadership. For instance, these are uncertain times for the people of Syria, because even if the people are able to oust their president, Bashar al-Assad, there is always the danger that he will simply be replaced by his brother, Jeb al-Assad. Now, I'm running for re-election this year, and so my opponent has been very critical of my Middle East policies. But one thing I think voters should keep in mind when they go to the polls this November is that just a little over a year ago, I personally captured and killed Osama bin Laden. So, if you were pro-Osama bin Laden, then you should vote for the other guy. But for everyone else, I want to let you know how we got him in a song. I had some disagreements with things Osama said. He saw himself as living, well, I kinda saw him dead. So I sent some Navy SEALs in to shoot Osama's face, and we had his body reeled in to find a final resting place under the sea. That's where he'll be. We gave him 3 plugs, now he's with sea slugs permanently. Now that he's out there in the dark, a sushi platter for the sharks. Instead of virgins, he'll be with sturgeons. What's my next action? How's this reaction? I won't refuse to send a Fox News crew under the sea. Thank you.
For returning to Great Speeches and Interviews at Access Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Is the Two-Party System Making the U.S. Ungovernable? You can listen to this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Are we in the mess, the mess of absolute gridlock that I think is being described by your opponent?
Well, I think that Ariana put it very, very well. There was a time when there was slavery, and there was a time when women couldn't vote. And all those things no longer are the case.
They all changed.
And they all changed under the two-party system, which is the subject that we're debating tonight.
So, David Brooks, why is it different this time?
Because it wasn't always thus. If you go back to, say, 30 years ago, and you look at the two parties, in the first place, the two parties overlap. Now they do not. There's no common ground between them. In the second place, if you look at the things they were able to do, like tax reform in 1986, you had a whole series of bipartisan agreements. If you cover Congress the way I do, you had in those days a whole series of personal relationships. That simply doesn't exist, and that's
so
one
you,
of the
you
reasons...
So you think there was something of a golden era, a silver era?
No, there was a period of constructive competition. They fought. Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton. I regard that as highly polarizing. But they fought to balance each other's weaknesses. And now they don't. They fight to stagnate.
I think this is a normal. The bipartisan ideal is always like a little worrisome to me. I consider actually the two most dangerous words in Washington to be bipartisan consensus. It's kind of like when my wife and my doctor and my lawyer all agree that I need help. I just. it concerns me a little bit. I'm glad to sit here and criticize the two-party system. I don't have that much good to say about it. The alternative. What is the alternative? My biggest concern is that in a multi-party system, it leads to power in small, screwy ideologies. You know,
well,
arguing
that you think that the system is making America ungovernable. Are you arguing for a better functioning two-party system, or are you arguing for a multi-party system?
Well, we are arguing for something that will shake up the current dysfunctional system.
But what? Garden gnome party holding the balance of power.
Ariana has the mic.
Subsidized garden gnomes everywhere.
Let Ariana have the mic.
But the truth at the moment is that as an immigrant to this country, as somebody who's lived the American dream, I'm fully aware of the fact that the American dream is dying for millions of Americans. And I have two daughters in college, and a growing number of their friends are graduating from college and they can't get jobs. We have 26 million Americans at the moment who are either unemployed or underemployed, and we don't have any plan that the two parties seem to be capable of how to bring jobs about. So there is a huge dysfunctionality, and the results are really incredibly profound. I mean, they're changing the nature of this country. Upward mobility has been at the heart of the American dream. Now we are number 10 when it comes to upward mobility. We are behind France and Germany. Excuse me, but being behind France in upward mobility is like France being behind us in croissants and afternoon sex.
But to PJ's point about the school, it's just your dumb kids. Why is that about the two-party system and not about everything else?
Well, the idea that it's dumb kids that are the problem is just, you know, it's just charming PJ. I mean, whatever PJ says is charming because he's funny, but it's not true.
And that's our debate for this evening. Zev Chaffetz, come on in.
Well, I would say not true is, that's pretty definitive. The notion of being in a debate with Arianna Huffington, arguing that America has lost its ability to have upward mobility, is a startling experience. And I want to say something about David's notion about bipartisanship. Two things quickly. First of all, polarization is a good thing, not a bad thing. In countries where you don't have polarized political debate, you have no debate. Civility does not equal democracy. And the other thing about this golden age of advise and consent, when all the congressmen got together, the senators got together and had cocktails and so on, and there's no bipartisanship anymore, I just want to say the following words. No Child Left Behind, which was passed in a bipartisan way, the Medicare prescription, the Bush tax cuts, the Iraq war, which, like it or not, was a bipartisan affair, and the health care bill, which was passed
get where you're going, David Brooks. Yeah.
All of these things have been passed in the last 10 years.
Right, David
first,
Brooks.
First on the civility point, system. Screw off, you fat bastard. Let's go. I believe in conflict. I'm a columnist. Conflict is fine with me, and I'm fine with that as long as it's constructive. The problem is we have parties that don't represent the country, and you've got vast numbers of people whose views are not basically represented. So the country is still a bell curve country, and so you don't have construction. You don't have constructive competition, which would be us talking and then reaching an agreement after an hour. You just have.
David, can I just say that in the last election, the Republicans nominated John McCain, a more reasonable Republican. Republican than that would be hard to find. And the Democrats nominated Barack Obama. That's what you have. Those are the two leaders of the major parties, at least until the next election. I don't think that you can make the case that these are extremists who don't talk to one another who aren't civil with one another.
Compare pre-nomination John McCain to post-nomination John McCain and see what a guy has to do to get elected.
Ariana Huffington, you said democracy cannot be a spectator sport. Your opponents are saying that Americans by nature are not ideological. Maybe those two things are not necessarily in conflict with each other, but do you take their point that for the most part Americans aren't that into politics?
Americans don't believe that their current political system is working. That's why you have 37% of Americans who are registered as independents, because they don't believe our current two-party system is delivering what the country needs. And increasingly, young people who really do want to find solutions to our problems are choosing civic engagement instead of political engagement. We have long waiting lists for people to join Teach for America. So it's not as if they've given up on making the world better. I mean, PJ and Zed have may have given up on making the world better, but young people haven't. They just don't see the political route through the two-party system as the way to make the world better. But if we give up on making the world better, then we might as well give up on everything. You know, I mean, I think in the end, Churchill was right. He said, Americans can be counted to do the right thing after they have exhausted all other possibilities. And the two-party system is one of the other possibilities we have now exhausted.
You know, I don't at all feel fatalist about this. I don't feel like standing pat. I think we are in the middle of a huge fight. I think Tea Party is a very good example. I keep waiting for the Democratic Party to have the equivalent. I hope that it will. I think we're in the midst of a political realignment going on in the United States. I think our opponents mistake a current situation for a permanent situation. I still keep waiting for hearing what is the alternative to the system that we have now. I'm open to the idea that there might be an alternative, but I'm not hearing any alternative. I'm hearing merely a criticism of the system that we've got now.
Well, that's all they actually need to prove.
Exactly.
But it does raise the point. But it's a very, very important point that I think the audience will want to hear from you, Arianna, as opposed to what?
The primary way is to allow more competition, you know, freedom-based system. We believe in competition in everything except politics. When it comes to politics, you got to pick your party and run with your party and actually espouse whatever the party stands for at that particular moment. One election cycle, it may be abortion or no abortion. That's not the way to fundamentally change the conditions we are all living under.
On a sleepy, endless ocean, when the world lay in a dream, there was rhythm in the splash and roll, but not a voice to sing. But the moon shone on the breakers, and the morning warmed the waves, till a single cell did jump and hum for joy, as though to say, this is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Then the one shone bright and rounder, till the one turned into two, and the two into 10,000 things, and old things into new. And on some virgin beachhead, one lonesome critter crawled, and he looked about and shouted out in his most astonished drawl, this is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Then all the sky was humming, and the ground was carpet green, and the weary children of the woods went dancing in between. And the people sang rejoicing when the fields were glad with grain, this song a celebration from their cities on the plain. This is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rocking goddess in the gentle arms of Eden. Now there's smoke across the harbor, and there's factories on the shore, and the world is ill with greed and will and enterprise or war. But I will lay my burdens in the cradle of your grace, and the shining beaches of your love, and the sea of your embrace. This is my home, this is my only home, this is the only sacred ground that I've ever known. Should I stray in the dark night alone, rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden. Rock me, goddess, in the gentle arms of Eden.
And now, back back to, is the two-party system making the U.S. ungovernable?
Question. Gentleman with the glasses and necktie.
Thank you very much. This is terrific. My question is to the panelists in favor of the resolution. Given the fact that the two-party system happened by itself, how exactly would you get rid of it, or perhaps worse, what would you impose?
Well, I'm not necessarily for realignment, but de-alignment. We're seeing all sorts of social movements that are growing up organically, like the Tea Party, like the Obama movement, like Move On. I'd like to see a lot more of those movements in order to loosen up the parties. And the second thing, I do think there has been a historical tradition, which I talked about, from Hamilton to Lincoln, and maybe to moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats today, the very few that exist, that tradition is unrepresented by our politics. And I think that long American historic tradition deserves a voice.
Zev Chaffetz, your opponent.
Well, first of all, I want to take issue with the characterization of the Obama movement. Obama was the nominee of the Democratic Party. He wasn't a movement candidate. He was a candidate of one of the two major parties. Had he been only a movement candidate, he would have gotten 3% of the vote or 5% of the vote or whatever movement candidates get, in my opinion.
All right, let's get to another question.
One of the reasons that the parties seem to have so much more power now is the control of the money. Even though there have been attempts to do campaign finance reform, we seem to be moving even further away from that goal rather than to trying to diffuse some of that. How do you respond to that, and is that affecting our two-party system today?
Ariana, you write about it a lot.
Absolutely. I think that's a very, very important point, and especially with the Citizens United decision. As you said, we see the stronghold of money on our political system, the power of special interests, the fact that we have dozens of lobbies per member of Congress. All those things have made us ungovernable. Because even when we have mining reform, for example, then you go back and look at how it was all watered down to the point where the Virginia mining disaster could happen. Even when you have regulators living inside Lehman Brothers of Fannie and Freddie, they were not able to prevent the regulatory capture that allowed the financial meltdown to happen. We have the greatest increase in poverty in the suburbs at the moment. We are becoming a third world country, and if we don't pay attention now, then it's going to be too late. And that's why this is the time to sound the alarm, recognize that we have become ungovernable, and change the system.
All right, more questions from the audience when we come back.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S. The motion is, the two-party system is making America ungovernable. Panelists arguing for and against this motion include New York Times columnist David Brooks, Huffington Post founder Arianna Huffington, and satirist P.J. O'Rourke. Stay with us.
We are back at this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan of ABC News. Our motion is the two-party system is making America ungovernable. Arguing for the motion, we have Arianna Huffington and David Brooks. Arguing against, Zev Chaffetz and P.J. O'Rourke. And going to a question from the audience, gentlemen.
My question is for the side in favor of it. In my native Canada, there's about 80,000 people for every member of parliament, and we have a chance to meet them much more than here, where there's about 800,000 people for every member of the House. And I'm wondering if it's a problem with the two-party system, or is the country just too large to be governed? There are many multi-party countries in Northern Europe that are much better governed than us,
okay,
but they're smaller.
I guess I would say, first, I was born in Canada, boula boula. You know, I'm actually not sure that's it, because members of Congress fly home every weekend. That's one of the reasons their lives are so miserable. And they hold town meetings. And a lot of places, I'm at the flight, not the getting there. They hold town meetings, and if they can get 30 or 50 people to show up, they're happy. They love to meet people. They spend a lot of time meeting people. I don't think that's it. I don't think it's when they go home that the problem is. I think it's when they come to Washington and are surrounded by a psychological vortex. I just want to make that explicit. I think the psychology within the parties has changed.
And Peter, I think you're almost arguing that the bluntness by design of a large system of two parties that you feel have a lot of ideological overlap is perfect for a gigantic country like this one.
Well, I think that it is, because I think that the intrusion of third parties and other interests just has a tendency to act as a sort of spoiler situation, basically throwing the race to George W. Bush instead of to Al Gore, who would have been such a wonderful president. I do think it suits us. One of the problems, of course, is when we face a kind of crisis like we have at the moment that is both extremely pressing and yet, unlike Pearl Harbor, is not perfectly immediate. Our system is extremely slow to respond. Do we want to live in a country with a political system that is a little too slow to respond, or do we want to live in one of those countries where the political system is a little too quick to respond? I pick slowness myself.
Would you like to respond?
Because it depends on the kind of problems we're facing. The problems that we're facing now and how serious they are. When it comes to unemployment, when it comes to foreclosures, when it comes to bankruptcies, when it comes to the fact that growing numbers of kids can't afford college, and if they graduate from college, can't get jobs. I mean, these are serious problems. And they're also leading to a kind of political instability and a kind of demonizing our opponents, which always happens during times of deep economic anxiety, whether it was the 1880s when we were expelling Chinese workers, or the 1930s when we were expelling Hispanic workers who are actually American citizens. You see what the problems are when we are not taking steps to deal with them in a timely manner.
Okay, I'm going to go to another question.
Hi. I think this debate is great, but I think one of the concerns that a lot of people have is, how do you shift away from a two-party system? Basically, how do you cope with the Nader effect, where the balance becomes shift too far in one direction as you're trying to divide the parties?
I would say that even though we don't have to take that question on in order to win the debate, we are very willing to take that question on. And, you know, there are many voting measures that could be put in place if the two-party system did not have a stronghold on the current electoral system that would make it possible, for example, if you voted for Ralph Nader and Ralph Nader did not win, for your vote to go to your second choice. I mean, that is a completely plausible system that can be implemented immediately if the two parties did not prevent it from being implemented.
David Brooks.
I mean, just another rule is non-party primaries. I mean, if you look at the most disaffected people, they're not actually where Nader is, or not where libertarians are. They're in the middle. 37% of the country basically feels disaffected. But they have no candidates to vote for in general elections because they're just not offered them. And if you had non-party primaries, you'd have a better shot. They'd have a voice.
And that's a point that I brought to you before from their argument that you didn't really respond to, is that they're talking about the system as it is, really leaving people with such distasteful choices that they don't have choices, and that's a lot of people, and they feel a major flaw in a democracy. Zev Chavitz?
Yeah. And in multi-party systems, there are many people who also don't feel that they're represented by any of the parties. And I, having lived in a country that has 14 parties, I can tell you that I didn't find any that represented me. That's a sort of inherent problem of democracy. If you have a party that fits the taste of every person or every group of people, you'll have hundreds or a multiplicity of parties that will make it impossible to govern.
Okay, and gentlemen in the center.
At NYU, we have the privilege to have some very good faculty, including Professor Stephen J. Brahms, who talks about approval voting, which is one of the systems they talked about, where if your first choice doesn't get elected, your voice goes to your second choice and down the line. It produces more democratic outcomes. And my question is, why would this be a negative thing to institute?
I don't have any inherent objection to this. I think it's interesting that we're hearing the solutions to the problem positive here more from the audience than from the other side. But one of the beauties of America's federalist system, of our highly decentralized system with all sorts of states are essentially in charge of voting laws. States have enormous latitude. And the fact that we have this flexible system would allow us to try things out like that. Maybe they would work beautifully and would produce the kind of results that you think that they might. Maybe they would produce perverse and bizarre results. We'd find out. I'm thinking
your opponents are saying, though, that the way the system runs now has such a stranglehold on the way the system runs now that those reforms are unlikely to be put into place. Am I anticipating?
Well, I mean, let's take this case right
David
here.
David Brooks.
We've got a 5'6" Jewish guy who runs this city, Mayor Bloomberg. He thought about running.
Is he Jewish?
Who knew?
I'm amazed he's 5'6". So he thought about running for president. And he has some money, I hear. And so he thought, well, you know, and there are a lot of people who are disaffected. So could I win? And then he thought, well, I could win some states. Probably not all of them, but I could win some. And then it would get thrown into the House of Representatives, in a body staffed entirely by Republicans and Democrats. There's no way they're going to vote for me. And so he was dissuaded from running as a third-party candidate by the fact that the two parties have a stranglehold on the presidential process.
And this is bad? He might be,
I'll live here.
He might be a great president, by the way. I have no reason to think that he wouldn't be. And I might vote for him. But the fact that a guy with $16 billion can't become president of the United States simply by buying the election does not strike me as a flaw in the Democratic
system. Anti-Democratic. So the guys who raised $500 million?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Hillary Rodham Clinton. This one's for you, Barack Obama. At first I was ahead, I was satisfied. Kept thinking you could never win, you're too unqualified. And then I spent so many nights working on the campaign trail. Do you think I failed? That I gave up 'cause I'm not male? So now you're in, you made your case. Though in delegates you beat me in the nomination race, I still have one state on my side. I'll wipe away your foolish grin, 'cause in the state that's called delusion, I still think that I can win. Did you think I'd go walk out that door, just turn around and hang it up, 'cause I'm not winning anymore? My ambition's still alive. From now on, I won't even sleep. I'm pinning all my hopes on dreams that they will catch you with a sheep. Then on that day, they'll say to me, we're really glad that you are still around. Please come back, Hillary. No, I won't give up my chance till monkeys fly out of my pants. I will survive.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.